Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of Now Hear This, Canby. I'm James Walton. I get to read the news around here. Thanks for joining us. Let's begin. A flood of contract nurses, paramedics, and other relief workers are headed to the state's hardest hit hospitals amid a Delta-fueled surge of coronavirus patients that has pushed Oregon's healthcare system to the breaking point, Governor Kate Brown announced Wednesday. The workers, up to 500 total, come courtesy of a newly signed state contract with Jogen Health Solutions, which will deploy hospital crisis teams to central and southern Oregon, which are seeing some of the highest case rates per capita in the country, as well as long-term care facilities statewide. Separately, the state has also contracted with AMN Healthcare for at least 60 additional nurse and clinical positions. The additional personnel will bolster medical staff capacity to help manage hospitalizations that Brown said have jumped more than 990% since July 9th. The deployment of crisis response teams should provide some welcome relief to our hospitals, particularly in central and southern Oregon, that are overwhelmed given the recent surge in hospitalizations among mostly unvaccinated individuals, Brown said in a release. The hospital crisis we are facing isn't just about beds, it's about having enough trained healthcare professionals to treat patients. I am so pleased that we will be able to provide these resources to help our hospitals and long-term care facilities meet increased demand and continue to provide vital healthcare to Oregonians. Oregon on Tuesday crossed the threshold of 1,000 hospitalized COVID-19 patients for the first time in the pandemic, which Brown hailed on Twitter as a terrifying milestone. Delta is ripping through our communities around the state and across the country, Brown said. Flooding hospitals and stretching thin our nurses and healthcare staff as they work to treat patients, hitting hard our communities with low vaccination rates. This is not a drill. Leaders from Providence, Legacy, Kaiser, and OHSU healthcare systems held a joint press conference on Wednesday afternoon, saying their frontline healthcare workers are stretched to the breaking point amid the Delta surge. Some healthcare systems have had to delay non-emergency surgeries to adequately staff their hospitals. We've gathered today to share a collective sense of urgency around the unprecedented spread of the Delta variant, said Dr. Seth Podolsky, Chief Medical Officer at Legacy Health. We plead with you in our communities to understand that Delta is different. Two intensive care nurses also shared personal and at times emotional testimony about their experiences during this latest surge, which has hospitalized almost twice as many COVID-19 patients as during the peak of the pandemic in 2020. Oh, the war has changed, registered nurse Levi Cole said. The enemy has gotten meaner and society as a whole has let its guard down. And we're all pretty overwhelmed and pretty exhausted, and we are running out of the available will and faith in society to do its part so that we can help them. Hospital officials said the current surge has not yet reached its peak and grimly predicts that hard decisions lie ahead. The state on Wednesday reported nearly 2,800 new cases, 129 of them in Clackamas County, and 20 COVID-related deaths. Under the state's contract with Jogen, hospital crisis response teams will head to the St. Charles Health System in Bend and Redmond areas and to Asante hospitals in Medford, Ashland, and Grants Pass, as well as the Providence Medford Medical Center and Mercy Medical Center in Roseburg. The hospital crisis response teams will be supported by up to 300 registered nurses in medical, surgical, emergency departments, and critical care, 20 paramedics, 61 certified nursing assistants, 34 respiratory therapists, and 5 medical technicians. These teams will also be able and ready to move to other hospitals if needed. This is much needed infusion of quality medical personnel that can help us get through this critical time in the COVID-19 pandemic, said OHA Director Patrick Allen. Long-term crisis response teams, a total of 10, will each be made up of 3 registered nurses and 5 certified nursing assistants and will be sent to facilities around the state to build capacity so patients can be discharged. A sometimes divided Canby school board on Monday came together to share a unanimous message. Officials will not defy the governor's latest coronavirus mandates, but they will continue to push her to return authority for those decisions to the local superintendents and directors where they feel it belongs. Canby had, in July, been one of the only Portland metro area school districts to announce it would make mask wearing optional for students and staff when it reopened for in-person learning this fall. These plans were upended a couple weeks later when Brown, amid an unprecedented surge in the new cases and hospitalizations driven by the highly contagious Delta variant, yanked back local control over masks and imposed a statewide indoor mandate. In the board's response, which was signed by all 7 members and read by Vice Chair Tom Scott during the Monday's meeting, officials said they would not defy the governor's mandates, which might result in hefty fines to the district and other penalties for educators who refuse to comply, but would continue to, quote, advocate for local control of decision-making on health and safety protocols for our schools so we can serve our community's specific needs. The Canby School Board recognizes its duty to uphold the laws of the state of Oregon and hereby formally requests a return to local control for decision-making on all COVID-19 health and safety protocols, the statement read. The district successfully followed all protocols to protect students, staff, and school communities prior to this statewide mandate. This board remains committed to ensuring our students are in school for face-to-face instruction 5 days per week for the entire school year. We will work in conjunction with our superintendent, administrators, staff, and local public health authority to provide safe and quality instruction to our students. The letter concluded by asking community members to join the board by contacting state and county leaders to ask for local control and decision-making to be returned. The August 23rd work session, the board's first meeting since Brown's mandate had been announced, was held virtually and did not draw the flood of angry comments that might have been expected, and which did occur during a recent Clackamas County Board of Commissioners meeting in which residents were invited to speak against statewide mask and vaccine mandates. While some parents and community members did indeed protest the state-mandated coronavirus guidelines, others asked not only that the rules be followed, but that even more be done to ensure students, the youngest of whom are not eligible for the vaccine, stay healthy and schools stay open throughout the year. Specifically, several parents asked that the district use alternative arrangements for lunch and outdoor spaces if possible to ensure students can maintain safe physical distance while unmasked. Governor Kate Brown on Tuesday announced that masks would again be required in most outdoor public spaces, including large events, starting Friday. The mandate applies to all Oregonians regardless of vaccination status. The Oregon Health Authority, that's the OHA, also strongly recommends masking for outdoor gatherings at private residences when individuals from different households do not consistently maintain physical distance. The Delta variant is spreading fast and wide, throwing our state into a level of crisis we have not yet seen in the pandemic. Cases and hospitalizations are at a record high, said Governor Brown. Masks are a quick and simple tool we can immediately deploy to protect ourselves and our families and quickly help stop further spread of COVID-19. Oregon reported a record 4,701 new and presumed cases of COVID-19 on Monday, with 937 patients hospitalized and 253 in intensive care, both new highs in the COVID-19 pandemic. The highly contagious Delta variant, which spreads much more easily than the original coronavirus or other variants and can be carried and transmitted even by fully vaccinated individuals, has fueled this newest surge, pushing Oregon's hospital system, particularly in the southern and eastern parts of the state, to a breaking point. Brown has mobilized the National Guard to assist in the state's medical response and has requested aid from the Federal Emergency Management Agency and other states. 24 EMTs from FEMA touched down in the state Monday to help 6 Oregon hospitals, Brown said. It's much easier for people with the Delta variant, compared to people who were sick last year, to infect others around them, said State Health Officer Dr. Dean Seidlinger. This is because they have 1,000 times more virus in their nose, which means that those around them are much more likely to get sick because this variant behaves so differently. The idea that outdoor settings are vastly safer than indoor ones has become practically gospel during the COVID-19 pandemic. And though it remains largely true that outdoor spaces are safer, the Delta variant has changed the equation significantly. Where previously outdoor transmission was almost impossible, the state now has confirmed and documented cases of outdoor spread at large events, including the Pendleton Whiskey Music Fest last month, that sparked at least 60 new cases. The state said its newest mask rule does not apply to, quote, fleeting encounters, such as two individuals walking by one another on a trail or in a park. It does not apply to children under 5 years old and people who are eating and drinking or those experiencing homelessness. Those who are delivering a speech or performing music or theater are also exempt. Day-to-day operations of K-12 public school will be governed by separate rules outside of this new mandate, Brown said. The combination of vaccines and masks is the most powerful way we can fight this latest surge of COVID-19 and save lives, Brown said. Vaccination continues to be the best way you can protect yourself and your family from the Delta variant and the most effective way we can help our exhausted nurses and doctors. The new mandate comes at a busy time for Cambie's suddenly reactivated events calendar. The Clackamas County Fair wrapped up Saturday, and while attendees were encouraged to wear masks outdoors, they were only required in indoor spaces, including barns, few did so. Coming up this weekend are the Big Night Out Street Dance on Friday, hosted by the City of Cambie, and the Cuts Forth Cruisin' at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. While many aspects of daily life have returned to normal, or at least what could be called a new normal, there are some things that still require a great deal more strategy and maneuvering than they once did. Planning a birthday for a centenarian and a long-term care resident is one of those things. But after having to celebrate a 100th birthday through a window in a walkie-talkie last August, longtime Cambie resident Irene Wolf's children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren were determined to do whatever they could to ring in her 101st in person this year. It happened in waves, with small groups of family members, all wearing masks, arriving throughout the day to visit and celebrate with the lady most of the youngsters still know as Great Nana, a mispronunciation of Great Nana, but also a reference to her habit of bringing bunches of the fruit to church every Sunday as a snack. The oldest resident at Cambie Marquee Hope Village, Irene was born on August 22, 1920. She married Merrill Wolf and raised two boys, Jay and Steve, in South Dakota before the family relocated to Beaverton. Irene and Merrill moved to Cambie in the 1980s, where they lived on the Willamette Valley Country Club's golf course right next to hole 13 and raised their grandchildren to love golf as much as they did. "I've golfed all my life," Irene said Sunday. "I used to golf every day." Family members related how Merrill, who passed away in February 2012 at the age of 91, even taught their 10 grandchildren how to drive on a golf cart. Irene didn't remember that far back in history, but it sounds like something he'd do, she chuckled. Despite her advanced age, Irene remains active, spirited, and sassy as ever. Asked by one grown grandchild how it feels to be 101, she quipped, "Old!" And when this reporter asked about a something he'd heard from one of her granddaughters, that Irene had the habit of drinking two black velvets, an old-fashioned cocktail consisting of equal parts dark beer and champagne, a day up until just a few years ago, her face wrinkled into an expression of amused bewilderment. "I would say that one of my granddaughters talks too much," she declared with a hearty laugh. Irene is an avid player of card games. Her favorites are bridge and pitch, and a voracious reader. Oh, I love to read, she said. I still read a lot. I read whatever I can get my hands on. Irene, who is of Norwegian descent, was the rock in her family through difficult times, her loved one said, and was particularly sought out during the holidays when she would cook traditional favorites like lefse. She is absolutely unbelievable, really, her son Steve said. She's gone through a certain amount of bad times in her life, and she was always the focal point for our family. She provided excellent care to our father when he had heart trouble, and she put up with Jay and me, which was no small feat. The Wolf Clan did not get to celebrate Grape Nana's 100th the way they would have liked in August 2020, before a COVID-19 vaccine was available. Marquee Hope Village staff brought Irene to the library where she visited with her entire extended family through a window, using a walkie-talkie to communicate. I painted a great big sign and we put it up on the lawn for her, Steve recalled. One group at a time came up to the window. It was humorous and a bit chaotic and just a skosh on the overwhelming for her. But on her 101st, Irene was all smiles. She said she had no advice to offer anyone else aspiring to reach the triple digits. No wisdom, she said. I've just got good kids. It was nice to see them. I've enjoyed today. For photos, you can find this story on our website, canbefirst.com. Happy birthday, Grape Nana. And that'll do it. I'm James Walton. I read the news around here. Thanks for listening. Have a great day and enjoy the rest of the episode.
Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why don't we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under, it's under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Oh, wait, is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup? How does he, I even know what to get?
Look, I'm going to make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional-grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today.
Hi, I'm Megan Waterman. I'm the owner and operator of the Book Nook in Canby, Oregon.
And I'm Tyler Clausen of Now Hear This Canby, the show you're listening to. Megan, the Book Nook is one of my favorite places in all of Canby. It's a one-stop shop for gifts, board games, new books, used books, and books from local authors. Why did you decide to open it?
Well, I love the power of a story. I love how reading about different people and places, times, stretches my mind. It makes me see the world differently, whether that's a fantasy story or a biography. It all changes the lens that I see and how I interact with people. The reason that we added games to our store is for that same reason. It's just a different way to experience story through gameplay.
And along with new selection, you're at a new location, right?
We are. We just moved, technically just across the intersection to the old Parsons building. We've expanded our space and also our selection. So we've got more books, more gifts. We added a larger gaming section. And now with the world opening back up a little bit more, we're starting to relaunch some of our events. We have relaunched our general fiction and our fantasy book clubs, and those are going great. And we're about ready to kick off game nights, starting with our beginner Dungeons and Dragons camp, led by Camby's very own Tyler Clausen.
Hey, that's me! If you're interested in D&D, make sure you stop by the Book Nook and get more information about role-playing opportunities there.
Yeah, or stop by any time and chat with one of our booksellers about their current book recommendations and let us help you find your next favorite read. We're now open on Sundays as well, so we're there 7 days a week.
Nice. The Book Nook is in downtown Camby or online at booknookcamby.com.
Okay, well, joining us on the Camby Conversation today, it's been a while. Hi, Greg Perez. Welcome back onto the show.
Thank you. It has been a while.
How are you?
I'm good. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
I'm living the dream.
Yeah, staying busy as ever.
Always.
And as well, I haven't seen you in forever. Sure. Camby Economic Development Director, James Sickle, been like 2 days.
Yep, about 2 days, yeah. For two people that are out and about, we sure do run into each other a lot, but it's always a pleasure.
Yeah. And we're talking Camby's Big Night Out, which is coming up this Friday, and just the big weekend in general.
Yeah, yeah, it's shaping up to be a great event. So Friday, August 27th, the Big Night Out kicks off at 6 p.m., and it goes to 11 p.m., and it's an event that we've been having since 2015. Obviously, we didn't have it last year due to COVID, but this will be our sixth year. So
and we're not rusty setting this up.
We're not rusty.
We are not rusty.
We've been planning for a year on this one. Yes, yes. And it's a great event. It's got three main components. So live music, free kids activities, and then we bring in local bricks and mortar businesses and nonprofits to sell food, beverages, and adult beverages.
And Greg, you serve as our MC and have since it started?
Yes, I have, and I enjoy it. Each year is it's a learning experience that I don't want to leave anybody out. I don't want to leave the businesses out. And then this year, I think I have it all memorized, so I'm going to be real good, and I know what everybody's serving, so it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
And he's more than just an MC. He really helps to volunteer and bring people together. He's helped tremendously on outreach this year with our vendors. We have more vendors than we've ever had. So we have 10 this year, and we've expanded the footprint. So we used to be, well, I think we started out as an I, and then we moved to an L, and now we are at a T. So I'm really, really excited about the expanded footprint. That gives people room to spread out, gives businesses room to really, you know, stake their claim. And
what's nice is we have vendors in all three areas, and we have tables for everybody to sit in all three areas.
Right.
So it's spread out, and it's a safe thing for everybody at this time.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. You know, the community events, I always say, are like one of those things that make Camby what it is. The Big Night Out is a little bit newer, right? It's not like the Clackamas County Fair. It's not, oh, my great-grandmother was the queen at the third county fair or whatever, you know, 80 years ago. This is something that's newer than that, but still, to me, it's a phenomenal event. It feels like it just completely captures everything that Camby is. It's right in the heart of our downtown. It's just so fun to see the community come together, having fun, dancing. Can you guys talk a little bit about it? And you see it from the stage, Greg, just the experience of what this event is like?
Okay, the experience from the beginning, we were kind of nervous.
Sure.
Because we didn't know what kind of numbers we were going to have.
At the very first one.
That very first one.
And
it was about
Ken Aragotti, right, who had the idea? Ken and Moore?
Ken, yeah, Ken. And then
And then we had a big group of people that met in Ebner's. That now it's their office, but it used to be a small conference room at Ebner's Custom Meats. And Greg Perez was there, the mayor was there, city councilors. We had Mallory Gwynn from Gwynn's Coffee House was the chamber director at the time. And we pulled together this big group in this kind of tiny conference room and put some paper up on the wall and started to envision what it could look like. Right. And I never anticipated that it could look like what it does now.
Because in the beginning, we had approximately 300 people that showed up.
There was that famous story where people were kind of like, I don't know. And then Jamie burst out in this interpretive dance routine that I believe you'd worked on for months. And it just really convinced, swayed everyone.
It blossomed it from that point.
Brought you to tears, I believe.
Yeah, I cried. Yeah.
Well, it's too bad that interpretive dance routine is never to be seen again. That was a thing that happened. I always think about it as kind of like a big block party for a couple thousand of our closest friends. So it's really just come out, run into your neighbor, run into people you haven't seen for a while, introduce yourself to a new business. We're really lucky. Downtown is growing. It's changing. We've got a lot of energy downtown right now. Not all of our businesses and nonprofits are from downtown, but it's a way for our community to get to know the downtown a bit better, get to know these businesses a bit better. And I'm just excited to be able to have this event kick off the big weekend.
Yeah. I know. One of the new things, because of the new businesses in town, they want to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the new businesses want to be involved. And yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
We didn't have that before. Because we didn't have that many businesses at the time.
Right. The density.
So it's grown.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's really filled out now, just in the 5 or 6 years. But that area where we stage it used to be a little bit of a lesser populated in terms of businesses.
Exactly. Well, one of the things that has been so great this year, so the event obviously has expanded a bit. And like you're saying, there weren't that many businesses. There was the Backstop, and there were other businesses, but they were mostly, you know, service businesses down the street. We're bringing them in. So now we have the Book Nook and Art-O-Matic, who are both on the part of the event. Their front doors are, and they're coming out. They're doing some fun stuff. You know, Art-O-Matic is having a special guest from Wonderland. They're having artists meet the artists. They're having a face painter. They're having all of these different people. Then there's the Book Nook. They're gonna have some games on display. I do know that.
And some goats.
And some goats on display. Games and goats.
Games and goats.
Yes, and they're doing a whole 3 Billy Goats Gruff.
Kids and kids.
Yeah. So it's gonna be a really fun way for them to be involved. It's not traditionally an event where we have, you know, arts and craft vendors, but this is a way for those businesses that are going to be impacted, hopefully in a really good way. I know the last event, I went into the Book Nook with my friend who was visiting from Portland, and I bought some stuff and she bought some stuff. So I anticipate a lot of that this year for the Book Nook and Art-O-Matic.
So what else are we going to have there? We're going to have a dunk tank this year?
Yep. So Donna Ellison from Ellison Team Homes is coming. She's going to have a dunk tank, and that is going to be a fundraiser for FIDO. And I cannot remember.
Explain FIDO.
FIDO is a nonprofit that helps to bring food and resources to people who are unable to feed their pets.
So and some veterans of them, too, correct?
And veterans. So veterans and then people
homebound.
Who... Yeah. Yes, people who may typically get Meals on Wheels. Donna was telling me this story about that she does a lot of, she doesn't just financially donate, but she really gives her time and energy to this nonprofit, and that she has been on the delivery end of the FIDO deliveries. And she says sometimes people are deciding if they're going to eat the food that came with Meals on Wheels or if they're going to feed their dog. And a lot of times they feed their animals. And she says it just breaks your heart. So this is a way for her to raise money for a nonprofit. It's going to be fun. She's going to have all sorts of people. She's reaching out. I think she's going to have some candy stars that will be sitting in the dunk tank. And then she looked at me, and I looked at her, and then we both agreed that I would not be one of those people because I'm going to need to be pretty dry and ready to go to tear down the event at the end of the day.
Yeah. A new one I brought in was the Cornhole Company.
Yes. Cornhole. Calibration Cornhole is coming. They're running an entire tournament in the parking lot near the Graham Building. They've been great to work with. So they do tournaments all over. They sell the boards. I've been working. Michelle is the owner. I think it's her and her husband. They're incredible. And the way that we met them was through Greg Perez.
I was at Camby Signs picking up our signs.
Yeah.
And I saw this guy with a trailer backed up with all these cornhole holds that Camby Signs was covering.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, what are those for? And he goes, well, we do this and do that. Hey, what are you doing on the 27th?
That's so funny.
Yeah, and then I just brought him in.
We also have for the people in the dunk tank too, so they can see, oh, that guy's a ringer, like I'm gonna take a break when that guy comes up.
That's a very good point. Yeah. That's a very good point. I was gonna say we also have Vanessa Zimmerman with Academy Mortgage coming, and she's got a henna tattoo artist, she has a face painter also, and then a ton of giveaways. So she has some giveaways that are Vanessa Zimmerman brand, some that are Academy Mortgage brand, but you know, sunglasses.
We have a clown.
We have a clown. Giggles. Giggles the clown is coming again. Awesome. She's amazing. She does balloon animals.
Yeah.
And she has done this event every single year that we've had it.
Giggles is a great clown. I know some people are, they can be polarizing. They can, you know, Giggles is the least offensive, least scary clown I've ever met. Least weird. She's just a great person.
I'd like to introduce her. I'd like to have her come up and introduce her.
Yeah, she would love that. And, you know, I've known her as Giggles since 2015, and then I've also worked with her. She has another side to her business where she does face painting. She does that at her 4th of July. Mm. And she's a great person to work with.
I think I'll do that.
Yeah, you should.
Maybe like a lion or a tiger or something.
Or just clown makeup.
Be a clown.
Yeah, there you go. Stand in for Giggles.
Scare people.
Who do we have on the stage? Who's our music?
So, kicking off, our opener is going to be Return Flight.
Yeah.
They're a 10-piece band. They have a horn section.
They're amazing.
Tons of energy. They're amazing. They've been at our 4th of July.
Good.
Yeah. So
they remind me of Tower of Power.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
You might not know who that is.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is either.
Yeah, we
believe you, Greg.
We're peers. We'll Google it later.
It sounds like a thing. It sounds like a cool thing.
It does. Yeah. It sounds like something we should know about when you talk about, history.
Yeah.
You know? Back in the day.
Yeah.
Tower of Records. I know that. Mm-hmm. So we've got them kicking off, and then at 8 p.m. till 11 is 21 Turns Band.
He's gritting his teeth. He's so mad.
And 21 Turns Band, they're coming back. So they were our opener in 2019.
Oh, okay. That's what I was thinking. And they're amazing.
Yes. Both bands are amazing. They both are high energy. They do a lot of different, music like 70s to today. They're just incredible. And they're working together to make sure there's no overlap in the kind of music that they do. And that's what I love about this event is people working together in ways that they might not normally. So,
we mentioned early on how this is just such a fine-tuned machine, which is just easy because things definitely don't keep changing in terms of the guidelines and whatnot, like everyone can get.
Right, there's nothing else going on, so it's gonna be just great. No.
Yeah. So we did have an announcement this week
about
the new statewide mandate for masks at large outdoor events, which this would obviously apply to.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have signage up at the door, there's not really a door, at the gates. So there'll be signage on the outside and signage on the inside, trying to remind people to please wear their masks per the governor's mandate. Obviously, while they're eating, while they're drinking, while they're singing or emceeing, they don't need to wear masks. Right. And probably not even in the dunk tank, because I think swimming is one of the things that's listed. Other than that, we are asking
that
people...
Too,
yeah? Yeah. Oh, I guess, that's a good point.
And then you'll be swimming in a circle like a shark. So
right.
That's one way to get volunteers for the dunk tank.
There you go. Yeah. So, we are asking that people, wear their masks outdoors if we can all work together. But we're really excited. And, Canby has been such a great community for this event during COVID times. So I'm sure that people will come out, they'll wear their masks, we'll just have a great time.
Some of the other things too, we're gonna have Wayward Sandwiches.
Yes.
Is gonna be there. We're gonna have the Knights of Columbus, who's gonna do the snow cones and the popcorn.
Yep.
Then we have a TMK Creamery of Camby.
Yes, sir.
Is gonna be there with hamburgers, corn dogs, cheese curds, and a few other things. And then we have the Game Truck.
The Game Truck, yes, the arcade Game Truck. They come, we've had them every year. I remember the first year that someone said, maybe we should have a Game Truck come. And honestly, I had no idea what that meant, what that looked like. I was like, oh, all right, a Game Truck. So then we met this company in, they're out of the Portland area, and they have come to every single one that we had of the big night out. They have also come to the 4th of July. It's like 20 games or something.
It's an arcade in a truck.
It's incredible. It has kids lined up.
I want truck. I want a camper.
Yes.
Just,
I want
just for me.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I have never actually
played.
That would
be my commuting vehicle. That would be what I drive.
I would never, if I that was parked in my driveway, I'd never go inside.
It holds what I think up to 18 on
something
the inside.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. They run it. So that's one of the nice things. So they come and they are super engaging. They call the coaches are coming and they're going to participate. They're really excited. They love this event.
Yeah.
One time I sat in the front seat while the guy backed the game truck trailer down the street, and I've never seen someone maneuver a vehicle that large in that way. So they really know what they're doing.
That's all those years of Tetris.
Yes, exactly.
Except for the 1 year I had to help him park.
So. Yes, well, there was that. But we have four businesses that will be selling, beer, wine, alcoholic beverages. So that is Wayward Sandwiches. That's gonna be FOB Tap Room, they're coming. Wayward, it's their first year. FOB, it's their second year. Ebner's is going to be selling, and then Backstop, and those two have been with us from the start.
And then TMK is the first year.
TMK, so that was just for the adult beverages. Then we have TMK coming for their first year. We also have Luz del Mundo coming. They'll be selling
Mexican food, right.
Mexican food, so they're Light of the World Church that's over on 3rd Avenue. Bee's Bake Shop is coming,
and they're
bringing some pretzels and some other delicious treats, maybe some brownies, some cookies. They're doing some stuff that would be fun for kids, fun for adults. Their food is incredible. So we're just really excited to be able to, have this event. Odmo's Pizza is coming.
Yeah, Odmo's is coming.
So we're just excited that we're going to be able to have this event, have so many local businesses, have that tie to our bricks and mortar, and that's really what this event is about. It's about supporting.
You know, we talked about Friday. What else is going that big weekend?
Yeah, so, obviously the big weekend has traditionally been focused. There's all the talk about the Dahlia Festival, and they've done an incredible job of kind of expanding their events. But they are doing events Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at the Dahlia Field. Then there's the Basil Art Festival, and so they kick off on Saturday.
Yeah, Basil and Art.
Basil and Art. Yes.
A painting on a
Right,
basil
right. Yeah. Basil and Art.
But that would be cool too.
It would be cool.
Yeah.
It would be cool. I would imagine a lot of green if you painted. But no, that's maybe not what you were talking about. The Canby Farmers Market will be back downtown. And then there's the Canby Dahlia Run 10K and Half Marathon, which I'm going to have to sit out this year because we'll all be exhausted from the Friday night. And I don't run. And then Cuts Horse Cruising, always a dream to go to. And actually, they're at the fairgrounds this year. I just passed them, and they look like they're out there marking spaces and getting set up. So that's going to be really super, super fun to have it out there. And I know they have plans to bring it back downtown.
Wild Hair has music.
Yes, they
Joan
have.
Joan Monin has music on Saturday night.
Radical Revolution on Saturday night. And then there's also going to be music at the
Road.
Yeah, Route 99 Roadhouse.
That's right, at the Roadhouse.
Yes, and then Sunday, like I said, Basil and Art Festival, Dahlia Festival, and then Slice of Summer is back in Waite Park, so that will be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
But there's kind of something for everyone, whether you like cars, whether you like music, whether you like running, there's food, there's just something for everyone, and I think that's the best thing about the big weekend is it gives people reason to come out, stay here, hang out, fill your weekend with candy.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. They, before COVID, back when things were normal, like this was sort of the big bash to like kind of end and wrap up the summer. And it is that again this year, but it's also sort of this message we're coming back as well, right?
Yeah, right?
We're coming back from the pandemic and we're bringing back a lot of these.
Yeah, we're really excited. This is our comeback event for the city. I think, our municipality on Friday night, but as a city overall, this is us really reintroducing all of the events, all of the reasons that people love Canby to the Canby community and hopefully to visitors as well. I know lots of these events bring in visitors, whether that's regionally from different states or even, I know that the Dahlia Festival gets international visits. So maybe one of those international visits will come to the street dance or cruising, find a reason to come back again and again and again.
Yeah, absolutely. We do have these restrictions coming back to a certain extent. The mask thing, please wear your mask. My wife is a healthcare worker. This Delta variant is no joke. Let's please do what we can to keep each other safe. Loophole to the mask there. Just never stop singing and never stop drinking, right?
I suppose so.
I mean, Greg is I was already there, so you don't have to tell me.
Right.
But we are not hearing these sort of signals, and hopefully not on wood, but that the large events are going to be curtailed or things like that, because I think people have recognized we need this. You know, we need to be able to keep schools open. This is an important part of our lives. So
absolutely. Yeah. And so we're just trying to make sure, as I think all people who are in charge of events, just trying to make sure that we are in compliance and that we're doing the right thing
and being safe
and then also having fun and keeping things alive and giving people a reason to community is really important and this community in particular we love our small community feel, and so I think that an event like this, a weekend like this, really gives us a reason to celebrate, and that's what I'm excited about.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see you out there, Mr. Perez. We'll give you the last word.
Well, I'd like to wish everybody a good week, and I'd like to see everybody and the community come out to Camby's Big Night Out.
We'll see you there.
Hi, everyone. Donna Ellison. Hannah Ellison with Ellison Team Homes. We wanted to come and talk to you today because we're super excited. A couple of things we're doing this month. We are one of the sponsors for the Camby Rodeo. Can't wait to see the rodeo because we love that. And the fair and all the kids. We've missed it for so long. So come see us this week at Camby Rodeo. Get your giddy on. And then the other thing we want to talk to you about, which is kind of the biggest news all year in Camby, is that we're back to being able to do our Camby Big Night Out and our Weekend Out.
Gonna be amazing. We have live music. All of the local businesses are showing up and supporting in any way they can, whether having food, having a tent. There's gonna be so many activities for kids to do. Also, stuff for adults as well. There's gonna be dancing. And we actually are gonna have
a dunk tank. And we're super excited.
Right,
my goal, which I think I'm hitting it, is to have at least one kind of well-known person every hour that we can throw balls to knock that person in the dunk tank. I'm not going to drop any names because I'm not that kind of a girl, but I will tell you we're going to have some really fun people that you're probably going to want to throw some balls at. We're going to do that part of it as a fundraiser for Fido Animals. You probably already know we partner with them so that we can help coming into this time of the year. Big needs for animals, which is really seniors and veterans and people that are not able to buy food. So we're doing that portion as a fundraiser. We're gonna have swag. Come see us. We're super excited, the rest of our team. We can't wait to see you. It's been a long time. We're gonna be outside. Of course, we'll be taking all of the precautions to make everybody safe. So come hang out and have fun with us. There are some things we'll never understand.
Over 70 years ago, a seed was planted in the rich, fertile soil of North Camby. The seed was Swan Island dahlias, and today it has blossomed and grown into the largest leading dahlia grower on planet Earth. Family owned and operated, Swan Island is one of Oregon's premier agrotourism destinations, boasting 375 varieties and 40 acres of gorgeous blooms. A sea of color that is among the most jaw-dropping and unforgettable sights in the entire Pacific Northwest. While their fields and annual Dahlia Festival justifiably get a lot of attention, Swan Island has a lot of amenities you may not know about. Their selection of gifts, gardening supplies, and other unique finds is among the most expansive in Camby area, and their fresh cut flower shop, it's always worth stopping for. This summer, Swan Island is featuring a rotating menu of delicious food trucks Thursday through Sunday and a wide variety of fun classes for all interests and ability levels. The Dahlia Farm will also be hosting a local farmers market every Friday and live music shows through September. Swan Island and their amazing dahlia fields are open 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., closed Wednesdays. For class registration, concert schedule, or more information, visit dahlias.com or follow Swan Island Dahlias on Facebook and Instagram.
A
And finally, on this episode of the Can Be Now podcast, we conclude with Can Be Then, which is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily, you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby, or connect with them through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. If you're a longtime listener of our history series, you know the city was originally known as Baker Prairie, probably named after James Baker, one of the area's earliest pioneers. What you might not know is that Jim Baker was also one of the most colorful figures in the old frontier West. Also known as Big Jim and Honest Jim, he was a frontiersman, trapper, hunter, fur trader, explorer, army scout, interpreter, soldier, territorial militia officer, rancher, mine owner, tollkeeper, and a mountain man who married not just one Native American bride, but perhaps as many as 20. Eat your hearts out, sister wives. He was born in Belleville, Illinois in 1808, though there were contemporary sources, however, that stated how Baker himself was not quite sure of his exact birth date or whether it was in the year 1808 or 1809. However, his childhood was documented, with his parents describing themselves as poor. Baker was one of many children in the family, and from an early age he excelled in fishing, and he also hunted squirrels, muskrats, and other small game using a gun. When he was 17, his father sent him to his grandfather in St. Louis for his education, but he was sent home after showing little interest in the instruction. During this journey, he met a capper who told him tales of adventure on the frontier. The young Baker needed no other encouragement. He went promptly to the offices of the American Fur Company and joined his first trapping expedition. It was as a fur trapper that he met the legendary Jim Bridger and Kit Carson, two larger-than-life figures who, sadly, never lived in Canby. But Big Jim Baker did. He settled here in the early 1830s and operated a huge ranch and farm on the rich lands that now form North Canby. He stayed until at least 1838, but the date that he left the area isn't known for sure. The records aren't exactly ironclad. What is certain is that Baker eventually tired of farming and left, selling his interest in the farm business to a man named W.C. Dement. He joined up with a large party headed for the annual trapper rendezvous in the Wyoming mountains, and from then on he would have had many adventures and exploits in the fur business. On May 25th, 1839, he traveled up the Missouri to Kansas City on a steamer known as the St. Peter, eventually traveling to Grand Island on the Platte River, reaching the Laramie Plains. They continued down the Medicine Bow and Laramie Rivers to the Sweetwater River, crossing South Pass to arrive at Fort Bonneville. For at least a couple of years, Baker hunted and trapped in the Wind River Mountains with the legendary mountain man Jim Bridger. When spring broke in 1840, he returned home to Illinois. But by the following, Baker had set out again on his second journey to the Rocky Mountains, traveling back across the Laramie Plains, over South Pass, down the Green River, to Bridger's camp at the Henry's Fork. Bridger, who was worried about his associate Henry Frabe, sent Baker and others to search for the lost party, who had been trapping at the base of the Squaw Mountain on the banks of the Little Snake River. In August 1841, Baker was involved in a violent clash at the junction of Battle Creek and the Snake River, when Baker's group of 35 trappers encountered a group of Sioux, Cheyenne, and Arapaho warriors. Frabe died early on in the fight, leaving Baker to take charge. This battle led to the Bastion Mountain being renamed Battle Mountain. After the warriors retreated on August 27th, the trappers departed from Battle Mountain and returned to Bridger's camp. Baker would go on to become a highly regarded U.S. Army scout and Indian interpreter for Generals John C. Fremont, William S. Harney, Albert Sidney Johnston, and George Armstrong Custer, thanks to his fluency in the Shoshone language and the use of the Arapaho Sign Language, as well as his knowledge of the rivers, trails, and mountains, all of which he'd picked up in the fur trade. In 1859, Baker took up a homestead near Denver, 3 miles north on Clear Creek. In 1864, he built an adobe brick building at what is now 53rd and Tennyson Streets, just west of the campus of Regis University. He built a toll bridge and owned the first coal mine in Colorado, where Riss is now, 18 miles west of Denver. In the same year, Baker was appointed a captain of the Colorado Militia along with John Chivington, who later led the Colorado Territorial Forces in the infamous Sand Creek Massacre. He would eventually ramble his way to a ranch near Savory, Wyoming, where he built a cabin from cottonwood trees with his three daughters, Isabel, Madeline, and Jenny. It was there that he became a beloved member of the community and picked up the nickname Honest Jim. His cabin had three stories. On the top one was built a watchtower, but as the likelihood of conflict with Native Americans had been greatly reduced, the third floor was eventually taken down. But conflict would still find him, as it turned out. Baker was an old man in 1875 when he was asked to serve under General Custer as a scout during the Battle of Rosebud in the Black Hills. In 1881, he was asked to scout in another battle, the Meeker Massacre, led by General Thornburg. On May 15, 1898, Baker died in his cabin on Carbon County, Wyoming. His body was buried in a small cemetery overlooking the Little Snake River Valley. A few years later, the Baker cabin was removed from Savory and taken to Frontier Park in Cheyenne, Wyoming. But in July 1976, the home of Jim Baker was returned to Savory, where it was incorporated into the Little Snake River Museum. The cabin was reconstructed under the direction of Jim Baker's great-grandson, Paul McAllister, who still lives in Dixon, Wyoming. And that does it for this episode of the Can Be Now podcast. I'm James Walton. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling?
Or
that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.